Welcome back at WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We are positively into a new year. I am headed for full Super Bowl. I don't even know, is it 56, 7? I don't know these Roman numerals. We'll be in Los Angeles in 2 weeks. And, you know, and with this move, I've been eating out all around the county and all these places. I've been over in Don's part of the world, over at the Beaumont and over at State Fair for the chicken and waffles the other day, as well as the Porky Fig. And we'll get back over there. Our friends at Fadley's and our friends at Costas, we're going to be getting back down doing Crab Cake, the Maryland Crab Cake Tour, presented by the Maryland Lottery. We're going to let ourselves play. Don, we're getting back on a beat with you. It's good to see you. How are you? It's been a little while since we got together. We're doing a little respite during the Super Bowl. So, you know, it's important that we get great guests, but we don't do as much. So I know we went right to the top on this one, one of our all-time favorites here. From the pit, is that correct? Is that what you guys called it?
Well, that's what I thought, but our guest, Pam Wood, one of the top government reporters in the entire state, actually in the on the entire East Coast. I thought she was hanging out in the pit, but evidently she's got posh surroundings down there in the state house. Tell us where you are, Pam.
So yes, I am in the basement of the state house, the glamorous windowless office of the Baltimore Sun here. I'm just down the hall from the pit, which is the group press workroom, but we're lucky. I have my own office with a door, but no windows.
Before we talk politics, I want to talk about the newspaper behind you, because like, is that today's, you put today's front up every day, or is that like a special one there behind you?
I do. I love the print paper. I bring it with me from my house every day and hang it up in our office. And people like to sometimes come in and see what's on the front page.
Pam, when I was a 17-year-old boy, 501 North Calvert Street, about, 4:30 in the morning, Larry Short would bring up the papers. First edition's up. Everybody come and get it. And the coffee be up. I'd be 4 in the morning and I'd be handing it out. The morning sun people would be coming in. The evening sun would be putting it to bed. My fingers still smell like print. So I have much love for the Sun. So I know you guys have been going through some struggles, and we've talked about this in the past. How are you doing? Because I know some of your colleagues and the band, we got things happening here. There's a media thing happening in 2022 here, huh?
There is a media thing happening in 2022 in Baltimore. You know, the Baltimore Sun still doing our best every day. Baltimore Banners come into town. An outfit called Axios is coming to town. So there's going to be some shakeup, but hopefully more news, the better, more funded news outlets, more competition, I believe helps, you know, the public know what's going on. If there's more of us keeping an eye on our government, on our businesses, on what's going on.
Well, Don and I fight about that with the football team, about more people or less. And I've covered football for 30 years. There's a lot less. There's just are, and there's less of everything. Does it feel the same way to a veteran like you in the pit when you're there, that there are less people chasing Larry Hogan around than, let's say, we're chasing Martin O'Malley around?
Yeah, there are fewer people down here. Now, the governor always does get a lot of attention, whoever he is, or in the future, maybe she, we'll see. But really, it's the eyes on the lawmakers. The day after day, while they're here in Annapolis making laws, there's just fewer people. Now, these days in the pandemic, a lot of reporters are doing things remotely, but just overall, there is less coverage. It's not unique to Annapolis and Maryland, across the nation. There's fewer state government reporters.
No, it's we've talked about it many, many times with Pam and others. Nothing more important to democracy than a free press. So all of this competition is good. It's needed. It's necessary. We need that light shined on government, and we see it every day with stories that come out. Matt, a quick aside, and then we will jump into covering the state house. But I had texted Nestor the other day, Pam. Both folks like you and Nestor, who have this journalism blood that just flows and flows and flows. I am just about done Carl Bernstein's new book, Chasing History. And as I read it, I think of Nestor and all of my reporter friends, because I don't think...
Well, I haven't won a Pulitzer, so, you know, don't
It's not only that. It is I just encourage both of you with your journalistic love to check out this book, even if you just call up a sample on Amazon, because if a book is supposed to put you in an environment, I don't know newsrooms, right? I didn't hang in newsrooms. You guys came out chasing us. But my gosh, when I read this, I mean, it is what Nestor's. Who's the guy that came up screaming first edition, Nestor? I mean,
Larry Short. He was from Highland Town. He was he was literally an old newsboy. He was an older gentleman at that point, but he had been doing this forever, bringing up the paper because that's what he did.
Well, there are Larry Shorts throughout Bernstein's book, and I'm thinking now you know, I don't know what kind of student Pam was. I'm guessing she was straight A student, but
not quite.
But Bernstein basically was within a whisker of failing out of high school and hated school. And somehow, as a junior in high school, then this is the Nestor Aparicio approach. Again, you're a much better student. I was there. I can attest to that.
I got a D in journalism, dude. And I'll brag about it. Miss Douglas hated me.
He talks his way into a major Washington newspaper, the Washington Star, and the rest, as they say, is history. So for those who love journalism, Carl Bernstein's Chasing History, just an incredible book. Pam, let's start with the obvious. You've been covering this now pre-pandemic, during the pandemic, now hopefully sometime soon coming to a theater near you, post-pandemic. Are things gradually getting back to normal in Annapolis and trying to cover the state?
There are some changes this year that so far is making the session a little better. I mean, last year, you know, it was all work and none of the fun part, none of the collegiality, difficult to track people down. Everything was very, very remote. One thing that's different this session, and we are on day 16 out of 90,
Wait a minute, Pam Wood. You look, you have that listed on the wall.
I do, yes.
Those of you listening and not watching, Pam glanced at her wall and obviously has a calendar where she marks the days. But I interrupt.
How many times have you covered that? How many years have you done this turn where you count the days?
I don't, too many. I should keep track of that better.
What year did you do it first?
Yeah. Sorry?
What year did you do it first?
I mean, I've been off and on coming down here sometimes part-time since I was at the Capital newspaper in Annapolis, which was 9 years ago.
Okay,
so
fair enough.
Off and on, sometimes part-time, sometimes full-time for a while.
So we interrupted you in the midst of talking about trying to get back to normal, and that's my fault.
No, that's okay. So one thing that's different is the buildings here are open to the public again. So if you want to come down and see your lawmakers in action in their floor sessions in the chamber, you can come in, you can go to the gallery, you can watch. We have protests and rallies outside on Lawyers Mall, outside the State House again. People are allowed to walk the halls and can come in my office and try and get me to write about, you know, the animal rights legislation, you know, or that sort of thing. So there's actually some people around. A lot of the work is still happening remotely over Zoom. I'm still watching a lot of committee meetings. But there is some hope that if Omicron passes and the numbers continue to go down, there may be some more in-person committee work. But there's a little more liveliness this year, which is nice.
It felt so weird during the pandemic, having been down there a lot, and I think I said before, both with County Executive Smith and County Executive Kamenetz, you know, they always, when we were down there, they would always make time to go down to the aforementioned pit just to say hi to folks. And there was this buzz, this old school feel of collegiality that's very, very difficult for you all to pick up on during Zoom. Pam, you mentioned, it's one of the things that intrigues me, and this, as we say, we never go in one direction. You mentioned advocates and lobbyists and others and citizens try to get you interested in a story. You get lots of calls. I mean, you have a good Rolodex. You're one of those reporters, which is the key. I mean, obviously, to know people and they know you. What percentage of the calls that come to you and say, hey, Pam, you should look into this or you should write about this, end up actually being written about, if you had to break it down?
Oh gosh, less than 50%, I'd say. There's 2,000, 3,000 bills, and a lot of them are routine. Some of them are interesting, but it's just hard to reach the threshold of, can we get this in the Baltimore Sun? Are a lot of people going to be interested in this? So I feel really bad. I have to say no a lot of times. Now, I do check out almost everything that's sent to me. I'll look up the bill, you know, read it a bit, you know, exchange some emails. But yeah, probably less than 50% success rate, because some of the stories that are obvious take a lot of effort, you know, if we're talking about tax cuts, police reform, marijuana legalization, education improvements, that those big issues take up so much of the, you know, space in the paper and space in my brain that there's not often time to write about some of these lower profile bills that are also interesting.
We're with Baltimore Sun reporter Pam Wood, one of the outstanding government reporters in the state. Pam, I'm always surprised by the high school students, and not, less surprised maybe by the college students, who will say something to me about an episode they've heard. And we've got, obviously, a large number of them have an interest in journalism. That's why they're listening. For those folks who are listening, and again, I referenced the Bernstein book, describe a day in the life of Pam Wood for the next 90 days. What's it look like and feel like? What's your day?
My day is very long. I mean, I start first thing in the morning before I even leave my house, answering texts, answering phone calls, checking my email. It's a combination of watching the floor sessions, which is the full House, the full Senate in the chamber. At this point, they're mostly introducing bills. They're not voting on a lot. Then afternoons are committee hearings where they're taking public testimony on bills. They're starting to vote in committees on bills. I'm attending press conferences. I'm seeing what the governor's up to. You know, anytime he has a press conference, the Baltimore Sun is there. Whether it's related to legislation, whether it's related to the pandemic, we're always on top of him. Press conferences. The other day I was at a rally about gun control. So it's actually quite a lot of variety of, you know, phone calls, emails, in-person meetings, you know, Zoom meetings, and then writing the stories and working with my editor, coordinating with my partner down here, and trying to get the news out both quickly to our online audience and get a version ready for a print edition.
Master, that's probably very different from when you were at the Sun, and maybe you and Pam sort of compare notes here. Like when you were at the Sun, Nestor, I'm assuming there were specific deadlines for traditional, as you said, traditional versions of the paper. I'm assuming those deadlines no longer exist, right, Pam? Is the deadline whatever it is throughout the day?
Yeah, for our online audience, yeah, the deadline is always 5 minutes ago, basically. We want to get it out as quickly as possible, as long as we're accurate. But we do also have to keep in mind our print deadline, that we have to have a version of the story in good shape, usually 5-6 o'clock. It's creeping earlier and earlier. Our printing is about to be outsourced to Wilmington, Delaware, which means earlier deadlines. But we also have to keep in mind almost two tracks, the print version. But then even after that story's gone, we can do updates to the online version, you know, not quite 24/7.
How's Mueller going to figure out if the Orioles won or lost in Anaheim last night if it's not in the early edition, Pam, huh?
Yeah, you're going to have to go to the website.
First thing I look at.
Pam, you said the two words that I'm interested in lately, which are Larry and Hogan. You know, we talked to all sorts of people like you do, and we – on the record, off the record, Larry's running for this, Larry's running for that. We talked to Larry. Talking to Larry is a waste of my time because not much of it that I believed or thought or didn't see as some sort of political thing. Sort of like talking to John Harbaugh lately. So
he hates it when I interrupt him on this. I disagree with Nestor on his analysis of how Governor Hogan
I call it the way I see it, and I've been doing it that way for 30 years. I'm a big boy. So when it comes to Larry and what he's doing and sort of coasting to the end here or jumping in, there's been all of this conjecture about what he's going to do, and it's pretty clear he wants to be the president. I think most things we've seen since the beginning of the plague are lined up to be anti-Trump, and the next step isn't being one of 99 other people that we're going to, you know, be senator. It's more about being president, I think. But so many people on the Democratic side said, no, it'll he's going to go after Cardin's seat. That's what it's going to be. Do you have any tea leaves? And I'm sure it's big theater down where you are, where it's talked about a whole lot more than it is between me and my cat and my wife out here in the county.
Well, I'm not a predicting type of person, and I don't have special insight into what goes on in Governor Hogan's brain. I wish I did have more insight into that. Certainly, he's being courted for the U.S. Senate. He has publicly said, I don't want to be, one out of 100. And frankly, that makes a lot of sense. He's not shown a huge interest in the legislative process here. His core competency and what I think he likes is being the executive, being in charge. This pandemic has allowed him to do that. I think that's his wheelhouse more than legislating. I think that's evident by the experience of the last 7+ years. So that would make logical sense. Now, but who doesn't like being flirted with for U.S. Senate, for, president? There's an argument, though, that he could be the version of Joe Manchin for the right, that if he ran for Senate and won, which is not a guaranteed win for him by any stretch, but say he were to win and the Republicans take over the Senate, he could be that less extreme, voice for his party and be a very important person. But again, he's said publicly he doesn't want to do it. He doesn't want to be a lawmaker. So,
February, yeah, I don't know how you back out of that. I was kind of shocked that he would just literally, because then when you run, you're running for a gig you didn't want, a gig that you disparaged. I thought to say I'm not interested in that right now is one thing, but to sort of disparage it's a whole different thing. I think politically that if the brochures come out, Hogan for Senate, I think it's a hard sell for him. I think he backed himself into a corner a little bit.
Yeah, or maybe he's just playing really hard to get. I don't know, but we'll know by February 22nd. That's the deadline to run for office this year. So we'll know if he wants to go for U.S. Senate this year by February 22nd. So at least this will he or won't we game will get resolved, in just a matter of weeks. So, we'll see. He certainly has indicated he wants some role politically in the future of the Republican Party, after he's out of office, whether that's in another office or doing a speaking circuit or something remains to be seen. But he's not ready to hang it up yet, by all indications.
Pam, you, there was so much in what you talked about there. We could spend the entire 30 to 40 minutes talking about that. We had Patrick Gonzalez on recently, and we tried to talk about, he had this poll. And just in the last day or two, Governor Hogan is making the rounds again. He was on with Morning Joe, and he is always painted on those shows. As this outlier, but not so much of an outlier if you look at Republican governors. If you look at Chris Sununu up in New Hampshire, Sununu was being recruited heavily to run for that Senate seat. And tying into what you said, he looked at being one of 100 in a body that right now appears to not work very well versus being an executive where you can get things done, just wasn't very appealing.
But also, it's also the political climate of his party and the wing nuts who run Correct. The whole thing to say, you're suddenly Kinzinger. You're suddenly Dick Cheney's daughter. You want to be castigated? Be a real Republican and try to get into that club. So right now, the temperature for him, even for Michael Steele, who we talked to, it's just not good to be an anti-Trump Republican at this point anywhere, let alone on the Eastern Shore in Western Maryland, from what I've seen. And he is that. He's afraid of that. He's not honest about that. He's never disparaging a Trump, but he kind of holds his nose.
I disagree with that, Nestor, 100%. And Pam can win.
Well, he voted for Ronald Reagan.
Well, wait a minute now. And again, I'll ask Pam to weigh in on what she sees and hears down there. Again, on this recent appearance of Morning Joe, I was going to say he actually doubled down on what I'm going to call this, if there were a John McCain out there now, this sort of John McCain approach, where he basically called the conspiracy theorist wing nuts. Now, there aren't many Republicans. And again, I've had my
differences. I've never seen him take Trump on and call Trump a liar, which he is. I've never seen him call Trump a fraud, which he – I've never seen him take a stand on Trump other than I'm not that. Well, that's a stand, but it's not a stand. It's a
deal. Have you seen him speak out against Trump?
He has – for a long time, he walked a fine line about what he said when Trump was still president, because he had to work with the Trump administration. I think he's grown stronger, especially maybe not so much Trump, but the Trump supporters,
correct,
you know, those who believe the election was rigged. Yeah, he's been pretty strong against that.
Correct. And, you know, his language is strong.
And the challenge he faces is, you know, what does in his political future, what does the Republican Party look like? What do they want? For some portion, I don't know what it is, would be absolutely turned off by Governor Hogan for what he said about former President Trump and Trump supporters, that he's a non-starter for some portion of that base of the Republican Party. I don't know how big that portion is in Maryland or in the country. Certainly, former President Trump remains wildly popular among, you know, voting Republicans.
Well, that would be all of Andy Harris's support, right? I mean, given his support, that's where it is. Those people that really support Andy Harris would be down on Trump right now, right? After the last 5 years.
You mean down on
Hogan?
They'd
be down on Hogan.
Down on Hogan. I'm sorry. My apologies. My bad. Yeah. Yes. They'd be down on Hogan.
No doubt.
Well, that makes a congressional, that makes a Senate run very difficult for Larry Hogan, right?
Problematic. Now, Pam said something else, Nestor, that I think is fascinating. And this gets to, I had made a note for myself as I walked into to record this morning. I wrote magic sauce. And that's what we talked about with Gonzalez about Larry Hogan and his poll numbers. He's 78% and higher among Dems. And it's really remarkable. And in your response, you said something, and I want you to break it down because you've been there the entire time. You said he has very little interest in the legislative process. And somehow that has actually proven to be masterful. How does that happen, Pam?
Well, yeah, and I just to explain a little further, you know, he does have interest. He wants the legislature to pass his bills. And, you know, not to pass the Democratic priority bills. He doesn't engage very much. I did a story a couple of years ago about how he has never appeared before a legislative committee to say, hey, pass my bill and here's why. Now, and I spoke with our three living ex-governors about this, and they said, yes, this is part of my strategy for the most important bills, make a personal appearance, you know, go down there, get the TV cameras on you, you know, in front of lawmakers making your pitch, you know, as well, you know, Governor Glenn Denning told me he used to have poker nights in Government House, you know, to engage with lawmakers and kind of give them a soft sell in his bills. Governor Hogan hasn't done that very much, but also, you know, he doesn't have, you know, if you don't, you know, he doesn't have a lot of losses, basically. But when you don't play that much, you don't get a lot of wins, but you don't get a lot of losses either. You know, he's really taken a strategy of doing as much executively as he can. And that, you know, has clearly worked for him.
That legislation by fiat, is that the desired outcome?
I don't know if I would put it that way.
When you're not a part of it, it is easy to say, to hold your nose at the things you don't like, or say, I did what I could and I made my stand, whether it's for defunding the police, you know, all of those taglines that went along over the last couple of years of being on the right side of that, even if it's not even a real thing, right? He's been really good at that part of it.
Yeah. And one thing that bears watching this session is that the state of Maryland has a huge budget surplus, and the governor is proposing a series of tax breaks for retirees, a more generous tax credit for low-income workers. And these things, which, you know, maybe wouldn't get a look in previous years, you know, might get more of a look from Democrats because there's some money. Some of these things, there are some aligned interests here. In terms of that, he maybe if he works it, he might get a little more consideration this year. So it'd be interesting to watch to see if he takes a different approach in his final year.
Well, Pam, that was one of my questions, and you are uniquely qualified to analyze this piece because you sat across from me and Kevin Kamenetz for many years. We'd bring you in, we'd go over the budget book. You were one of the reporters who actually cared about what was in the budget book. There were two or three others, but you were certainly one. And you heard us many times. And this is fascinating to me because what Governor Hogan is actually proposing with that $6 billion, right, Pam? Is that the latest number?
Roughly $6 billion? $4 billion, multiple billions for sure.
Okay, $4 to $6 billion surplus. What he's proposing,
$6 billion surplus, yeah.
Yeah, $6 billion surplus is something that we resisted. Now, admittedly, Baltimore County, over its history, has been seen as a very fiscally conservative county. We all agree with that. We adhere to that. But as you heard us say many times, we resisted the urge to spend one-time surpluses in a particularly good economy in ongoing expenses and preferred to put them in one-time expenditures so that they wouldn't create budget stress down the line. That's the fiscally moderate to conservative way to govern. The governor, perhaps with an eye, I don't question people's motives. I'll let others do that. But he's proposing what would be a much more liberal approach to governing, am I right, in terms of putting these things into ongoing expenditures that if we have an economic downturn, will create a pressure on the state budget. Am I misreading that?
Well, and what you just described about not wanting to use, you know, short-term gains for long-term expenses, that's what Democratic leaders are talking about here.
Right.
They don't want to, in terms of tax cuts, give up a huge amount of revenue forever because there's going to be another downturn at some
Correct.
Point. The question is can the two sides meet somewhere in the middle? You know, maybe not Governor Hogan's whole plan, but maybe some little pieces of it. That's what's going to be hashed out, you know, over the next 90 days. And that's what's really going to be interesting to see. Because they really don't want to, because we're going to need the money in the future. But then there's also a challenge with one-time expenses. So if you do one-time expenses, you're often talking about construction projects, right?
Certainly school construction.
Right. But with the inflationary pressures, everything is costing more now. So, you know, costs more now. And so is that the best use of dollars now, when the price of everything, you know, lumber, computer chips, everything is so high? So there's a lot of moving pieces here.
Well, what a great segue. And again, I hope our listeners, again, we're with Pam Wood, Baltimore Sun. Hope our listeners will follow Pam daily online. She updates throughout the day. She's on Twitter. You want the latest that's coming out of Annapolis, follow Pam Wood. Pam, your talk about one-time expenditures is a great segue into another dynamic that I'm confident you will be following closely. And that is the new Board of Public Works. And what I mean by that is Nancy Kopp, who was there forever, is no longer there as treasurer. The board, I'm going to ask you to educate our listeners as to what the Board of Public Works is. There's three members, obviously, the controller, the governor, and the treasurer, who's now Derek Davis. And my question for you is, over the years, the controller and the governor have sort of had this bromance. Does that change now that Mr. Franchot, the controller, would like to be governor? And what do you expect to see? How will the Board of Public Works be different? I'm sure you've got your eye on that.
Yes. So for listeners who aren't familiar, the Board of Public Works is those three people, and they're the final sign off on major state spending. You know, contracts for, you know, the state prison medical care gets the final sign off there. This week I wrote about, they gave a final sign off related to the Orioles lease at Camden Yards. They're getting a rent credit to cover the cost of the left field wall project. And that needed sign off from this board. And it's only three people, and it's often been used as a place for those individuals to get some attention. And one member, Comptroller Francho, Democrat, running for governor. So is he going to use this as a platform? And as you noted, he's often been aligned with the governor, and some people are watching, will he separate himself to be look more liberal, more of a Democrat? This week, he actually talked about the governor's tax cut proposals and said they're a great idea. So that was still aligning himself with Governor Hogan. So I found that interesting because we have 10 people running in the Democratic primary, Comptroller Francho, one of them. You know, is he going to try and set himself apart, make himself look more liberal? Not this week, but, you know, there's still several more to go.
I think conventional wisdom, and then we as the clock ticks here, we do want you to talk about what big issues you want folks to follow. But I think conventional wisdom, Pam, and I know you're not a pollster, you don't want to be a prognosticator, is that some of these approaches that the comptroller takes might play well in a general election. They could be problematic for him, as you said, in a Democratic primary. He's able to read the polls, and he certainly knows that folks appear to like, they do approve of the job that Governor Hogan's doing. Patrick Gonzalez, posited that perhaps that's a good thing for Kelly Schultz, and wouldn't help Dan Cox necessarily if the former president gets involved. So it's certainly something to watch along the way. But Pam, let's shift to nuts and bolts. I mean, I know there are things like we've got redistricting, we've got marijuana, we've still got policing issues. Even abortion is rearing its head down there, which people might. What are on Pam Wood's radar screen right now, the three or four issues that you think folks should be zeroing in on?
A big one we haven't talked about is marijuana legalization. That is likely coming in one form or another, and that's the question. It is likely to be on your ballot this fall.
The temperature is it's going to be on the people are going to vote on it here. That's where we're going to be.
That's the most likely path. But some of the questions are, do they work out all of the details, taxation, regulation, prior convictions, tons of stuff. Do they work it out now, put it on the ballot, and then bam, bam, it happens,
It's going to pass, right? If it's on the ballot, it's going to pass, right? Is there any question that we're going to have 60% against that?
No, polling indicates it's more like 60% in favor. The other question, though, is they could just put a broad question on the ballot and then work out the details in 2023, which would mean slower implementation. So one way or another.
Who are the supporters? Who are the players, Pam? Because folks like to follow the players. Who are the players on each side of this debate down there?
The people to watch, obviously, are the presiding officers, House Speaker Adrian Jones, Senate President Bill Ferguson, and the chairs of the judicial committees, which is where this is going to go through. So
Where's the opposition? I mean, if there's anything that's bipartisan in this country, and I travel a lot in this country, it's weed. It's not black. It's not white. It's not rich. It's not poor. It's not left. It's not right. It's straight down the middle, and it's not coming. It's here. I'm going to be in California next week. I mean, Massachusetts, it's DC. It's just everywhere. And I say this because, Pam, I've been doing this 30 years, and I think 25 of it, we sat around here talking about slots, casinos, horse racing, sports wagering. I just walked into a casino last weekend, literally for the first time in my life in Maryland. I didn't bet because I'm not necessarily a bettor, but I wanted to see the action. I'm a sports guy, and it's so much of what my future is in doing sports is that if you're not doing gambling, and it was so taboo. You know, Kevin Byrne would have thrown me out of the locker room 25 years ago if he thought I was putting action on games or knew was angling for a quarterback or inside information. The marijuana thing, like it's everywhere else, kind of like the slots and all of those things were so slow to come here when you're going across borders to do things. This is going to happen, right? I mean, I think every citizen knows this is going to happen. Does it feel inevitable in Annapolis amongst lawmakers?
I think it does feel inevitable. Maryland's almost never the first to do anything. We're somewhat of a conservative state. The first question of anything down here when somebody proposes something is, well, what other states have this? How does this work in other states? And as you noted, multiple states.
It makes you a follower, not a leader right off the bat, right?
Yeah. But some would argue that you can see where everybody else has done things wrong and screwed it up and avoid those pitfalls here, which is some of the discussion of marijuana. I think the support for it, you know, cuts across, you know, both parties and various demographics. You know, certainly with Republicans, you have sort of the libertarian angle among some of them to say, hey, live and let live. You know, there's some Democrats who are opposed, and a lot of it shakes out in the weeds, in the details of, you know, how much do we tax it? Do we allow home grow? All that sort of stuff.
Did you plan to say in the weeds? I mean, or was that just...
She's a writer. I mean, this is where you get professionals on. This is what happens, Don.
In the weeds.
Hey, I'd like to say that was on purpose, but no, that was not. But I'll have to use that again.
Pam, you started to reference the key committee chairs that we should keep an eye on and which committees this will play out. Walk us through that again.
Sure. Again, in the House, that's the House Judiciary Committee led by Delegate Luke Klippinger of Baltimore City. And in the Senate, it's the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee that's led by Senator Will Smith from Montgomery County. So most everything related to marijuana is going to come through their committees. Actually, Delegate Klippinger is the sponsor of the bill in the House that would just do a very broad referendum this fall that the House is probably going to move forward. So yeah, follow Delegate Klippinger and Senator Smith. They will be well represented in our stories through the session.
We'll keep an eye on that. Hey, Pam, the other thing is, and again, really important, I think, too, this is Baltimore positive. As these lines end up being drawn and we have new legislative districts and congressional districts, what's the headline regarding Baltimore City and the census and the new lines?
Yes. So Baltimore City, as most people are probably aware, has been shrinking and losing population.
Lost two more last week with me and my wife, by the way, just so you know. I have to say that. I'm not proud of that, but I'm just saying it is. You know, it's true.
So, yeah. So it's been losing population, which means, you know, these districts, whether you're talking about Congress or your state lawmakers, they are drawn on a population basis. They're supposed to have about the same amount of people in them. Baltimore City is going to lose seats here in Annapolis. They just have to. So everybody sort of understands it and kind of, you know, for boosters of the city and people in the city, they don't love it, but, you know, facts are facts. And so we're going to lose in the city one state Senate seat. And one of the districts is shared with Baltimore County, which is the current case, but it moves around a little bit differently. But it's just a reality. There's nothing they can change about it.
Pam, I love talking to people like you, especially when I don't know the answer. I'm the stupid citizen here. So let me be the stupid citizen. I always think this, and Mueller hates this because I think there's a lot of corruption in politics. Imagine that as Kathy just gets out of jail again this week. Drawing these lines, how is it really done? I mean, like what really happens? Because I see the way it's done in Texas and these other places.
Why do you have to preface that with there's a lot of corruption in government?
Well, because that I see the lines and I know where it came from. It came from corruption. If you look at Dan Crenshaw's, heck, we talked to Sarbanes and we're like, how did this happen? How does this? So tell me how it's supposed to happen and then how it's going to happen here, because people are going to yell on both sides that that's wrong. That's not the right way to do it.
Well, I just want to go back to, you started your question by saying you're a stupid citizen asking questions. I actually think if you're asking questions, that makes you a smart citizen.
Oh, thank you.
Because you want to learn.
I just don't know the answer to how gerrymandering really happens. I know it's a reality. I know it's corrupt, Don, and I know corrupt people were involved in it, or people on their end.
It wouldn't happen if it weren't involved in that. Stop the madness. Gerrymandering districts is something I'm opposed to. It's why I'm supportive of HR1 in the Congress. Gerrymandering districts doesn't make legislators corrupt. It makes them politically expedient. Now, Pam, jump in and referee this thing.
All right.
Boy, he PR'd that. I mean, it's BS, but I'm okay with it. There you go. We disagree on that, but okay.
Well, I'm going to talk about the process, not necessarily the intention of anybody. I don't want to cast aspersions on any lawmakers. We'll let the courts figure that out. And the new districts, both for Congress, already subject to two lawsuits. The districts for the legislature, which by the time this airs will be passed, that's likely to have a lawsuit as well. So we'll see what the courts say. The approach here taken by the legislature, which is in control in Maryland, that's the way it's set up. They took the previous maps and directed staff to adjust them to accommodate these demographic shifts and get the numbers right. What exactly the discussions were, that all happens kind of behind the scenes, but the supporters of these maps believe that they are constitutional and they're compliant with the Voting Rights Act. And one statement, which I thought was pretty fair, is just because you don't like how a map looks doesn't mean it's gerrymandered. Now, sometimes it is, but just because you don't like how it turned out doesn't mean it's gerrymandered. And gerrymandering, for those who don't know, is drawing districts for political means, you know, to advantage or disadvantage one party over another, rather than looking out for the interests of a community.
Don calls that expediency. I call it corruption. Somewhere in the middle, it's rational self-interest amongst those who are employed in government.
We wish it didn't work that way, but it's not, corrupt has another meaning. Hey, Pam, before we let you run, I'm calling it the quick poll of the week for all of our guests. This week, you get to come on. You dipped your toe into that into sports writing this week with the story on the Orioles. Two quick questions. NFL, should they change the overtime rule?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's a mess.
All right. Pam Woods, a one, absolutely. And the second, steroid players, the Barry Bondses, the Roger Clemenses.
Or the David Ortizes, by the way, who's also a steroid guy, but go ahead.
You know, that's tough, especially because baseball is so dependent on records and stats. And, you know, does it get blown in the water that some people played not in the steroid era and some people did, and we don't know everybody who did do steroids and everybody who didn't do steroids? It's tough to say. And then also you have to look at it as some of these players, what were their accomplishments when they weren't on steroids? Can you discount the steroid years, and do they still have enough, you know, to get elected to the Hall? I don't know. That's a tricky answer. And as a baseball fan, you know, it's hard to see cheaters win and prosper. I don't have a good answer there.
I think it is a real, Nestor and I are going to talk a little more about that later in the recon. I think also it's really weird for me to be on the fence about any issue. I'm funny, Pam. I'm almost where you are on that one. The last person that talks to me, it's that old thing, the last one in the office would probably win that argument. Nestor, does it get any better when we want to get it from the horse's mouth and getting it from Pam Wood at the Baltimore Sun?
Well, Pam's happy she's leaving before we discuss where the state money went to help the Angelos family, who's had plenty of money, get a new left field. So Don and I will talk about that amongst ourselves here. I'm sure we'll have some arguments. Pam, I hope to see you, at a crab cake event here at some point. I'm revving up the engines in March. We're taking the masks off at some point, 3 shots. I'm going to the Super Bowl. So we'll get you out of the pit at some point down in Annapolis and get you up here on the Beltway. It's some point, sit down, have a proper crab cake, maybe a beer, iced tea, whatever you're into, Bloody Mary. It depends what time of the day. How about that?
All right. Sounds good. No drinks on the clock though.
I'm sorry you had the referee, Moeller, and I. We fight more than ever. It's part of a 50-year friendship I think we've had here. Don Moeller, former Baltimore man. County executive, trying to keep me straight, as he's been doing since August of 1982. You can find him out on Twitter and certainly find him at Baltimore Positive. And Pam, of course, at the Baltimore Sun, in the pit or next to the pit, down at the State House doing her thing. You can find her out on social media as well as at the Baltimore Sun. Thanks, Pam Ward, for coming on. Pam Wood for coming on. Pam Ward, there's an old-school reference.
That's a throwback machine.
Pam Ward and Pam Wood. My apologies for that. I am Nestor. But there's no apology. I liked her too. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. And we never stop talking. Baltimore, positive.